As you can see, Ville is not here. Not sure what he wants me to say about it, but he will not be here for the next couple of weeks. I will be taking over this course at this point, and hopefully we will manage despite this.
Is he okay?
Yes, he's okay, and my that's okay. The hint he left you is here. I hope everything is all right. I heard from him this morning, and I asked if he wanted me to tell you something more specific, but he would not. So I'm not going to say anything more at this point. But the practical thing is that Ville is on leave and cannot be reached except in an emergency. Any issues you have, any problems, anything that you need to talk about that you would normally have talked with Ville, you talk with me. I have arranged myself some... Damn. Arranged times for appointments if you want to talk with me or if you need credits from this course. These are 10-minute times and you can reserve as many as you need for your needs. The point here is why I have this is that I have also other courses and a lot of other things that I need to do. So I may not be able to respond to you when you come, if you come without talking to me first. So arrange a time, that's the easiest way of making sure that you have, I have time to talk with you at the time you are coming. So what we are talking about today, yeah, as you can notice, I am locked in as VT, who I am not. The slides are not quite correct because they were written by Ville and they were not completely. They were not complete at the time he noted that he needed to do some other things. And I don't have access to the server where these slides are stored. Ville did set up one of my edits, but did not have time today. So anything I noticed today is not reflected in the slides, and we have to make do. And another thing about this lecture is that, you know, everybody knows that if you look at really good lecture slides, just look at the slides, you cannot figure out what he's trying to say. Because the slides are not supposed to be the whole story. There's always something else. And the idea is that the lecture together with the slides is what carries the story. So, okay, Ville is a good lecturer. And what I have from him are slides of what he intended to tell you. And we did not have time to talk about it much. So I have had to try to figure out what he was trying to say. At some points, we will try to manage. So, apologies if things are not as clear or simple as they are when Ville is talking. I could probably make a good lecture about this topic on myself, but I would have needed about a week preparation time. I got the warning about this on Saturday. Okay, today topic is folds. How to use folds, what folds are, how to use them, and if there's time, we'll talk about some other nice functionals. A lot of these things are, of course, the final grade of this functional programming one course, but also giving some appetizers about what happens in the functional programming two course, which is basically doing all of this and more in great detail. And having a lot of fun as this being done. But announcements, as I said already, Ville is away, will be away for the next couple of weeks. What I will be doing now is I will take over this lecture, obviously. I will be, as long as Ville is away, I will be handling credit approvals. You have any issues, it will be my job to solve them. But remember, I have other courses. In fact, I will be running from this lecture to prepare for my next, which is in 30 minutes later. So, yeah, don't have much time to do these things, but we will try to manage. And something that is at this point fairly clear is that since Ville will not be here next week, there will not be a functional programming 2 course starting next week. The plan is to have that course sometime in next fall, but the details are still a bit murky. If anybody has problems, for example, if you need to graduate before the fall and you need the functional programming 2 course, then something can be arranged. If you have something like that, then talk to me, or if Ville is back, then talk to Ville about it. Yeah, but otherwise, if it is not a big problem for you, then just wait for the next fall. Credits, Ville already told you at the beginning of this course, but we have to make some changes because Ville is not here. So there are 3 options for claiming the credits. So you know how it works. You complete all the exercises, get them all approved, and at that point you can claim the credit. Option one is that you book an appointment with me. 10-minute appointment is quite okay for this. Come to my office at the time and have your course page password with you, because I will be asking you to log in as you on this course page. And then we will chat a bit. I think Ville said that the 3 questions are... I'm not quite sure what he said about it. But basically, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Did you do this yourself? Did you really do it yourself? You seriously did it yourself? I think those are the 3 questions. I didn't want to say them because I wasn't sure if he said it here or just to me privately. But that's the basic idea. So we chat a bit and just try to get the feeling that you actually did it yourself. Because we did get, in a previous course, some complaints that people did get past this course without actually doing it in themselves. So we added this small check to at least discourage you from doing that. And of course, none of you are not going to do that. It's going to be perhaps 5 minutes, if everything goes okay. If you have problems or questions or something like that, then book longer time, but if you have just, you need the credits, everything is okay, then 10 minutes is okay. Second option is, again, have all the exercises approved. Go to the exercise session. I think we have one next tomorrow and then the week next week on Tuesday, but those other ones are not confirmed at least. Go to the exercise session, talk to me or Sampsa. And we have the same conversation, but other students get to hear it. And make sure that we note down that you had completed this. And if Samson did this, then Samson needs to tell me. All right. This option 3 is for people who cannot come physically at a time when we are available. So at that point, send me an email explaining why you cannot come. And then we will arrange something, a phone interview or Skype interview or something, and talk for 5 minutes. Those 3 questions and perhaps a bit chatting. Yeah, those are the options. And this all is in force until Ville comes back. And when Ville comes back, he has his own system. But that's going to take a couple of weeks. Any questions at this point? folds. I think fold is the first point where we actually get to see how functional programming is not just different, but also in some ways superior to other things. Of course, it might be inferior in other ways, but at least in this way, it is much superior to other ways of programming. And it's the first place where we actually get to see this. The ability to abstract quite a lot, so that we get not just the abstractions, but also rules for dealing with the abstractions, much more than, for example, in object-oriented programming, where we have different kinds of abstractions, but we don't get the kind of strong guarantees that we get these things with folds and other similar things. We only get with object-oriented things, we get more like, yeah, this is how it works, I think, kind of thinking. And I am not making fun of it. This is my best understanding of how object orientation works. So where we are, why do we do a fold? The idea is we have a lot of different functions, and I think we have at least one bug in this slide. All kinds of different functions that all share the same basic structure we have. They all do something with an empty list, and they all have a recursive case with a non-empty list, where there is something that we do with the result of the recursive case, which might or might not involve the first element of the recursive case list. Okay, this is fairly simple, fairly elegant, fairly not a problem writing these things. I personally like to write these things much more than I like folds. But there are disadvantages to writing them raw as raw recursion. One thing is that raw recursion, it's basically just like writing loops in imperative programming. And at some point, we start getting, if we always write loops, if we always write raw recursion, we stay at the fairly low level of abstraction, and we always have to think about what do we do with the empty list? What do we do with, okay, in this case, yeah, okay. And we never get to a higher level abstraction by this, at least not in the way folds go. So I will put this corrected for versions. Can you read this at the back? Yeah, good. Here we have the original ones, which is this slide. Slightly corrected because there were small bugs, but basically the same idea. And I'll put this online at some point. We can try them. So, for example, this should give us six, I think, yeah. That works. Should get three if I get length. Yeah. I'm pretty sure Ville did not test this, and I did not test them either. I just made sure that they went past the type checker. LM, we might ask whether 6 is in it. Yeah, what about 3? Yeah, okay. And no, yeah. Nothing very difficult. But if you start looking at these, as I said, they all have a common structure. And what do we have here? We can always write this like this. The empty list is Z, the result of empty list is Z. The recursive case goes like this. We have the recursion, which in this case is with the first element, element A, also on the right of some operator, and the first element of the list is on the left part. All of these are the same structure. Here should be, actually, we should have X here, and we should have X here. The difference in these functions is here. How do we define Z? How do we define this weird operator? So, for example, in sum, the Z is 0, length Z is 0, LM Z is not 0. Can you tell me what Z should be here in LM? Yeah, I think it should be false. And here, Z should be true. And then we have the recursive case where we have this weird operator. In sum, it's just the plus operator. In length, this place basically one plus to the right side, ignoring the left side. LM, it's basically just the OR operator. And in null, it's basically the binary constant function false. And at this point, when we recognize this, say this all have the same recursive structure. The difference is only what it does in the recursion. We can then define a function which is called fold, a fold error. The R in it is caused, it's related, it's just a differentiates it from a different way of defining fold, but basically this is a fold. So we have fold, which takes a some operator, which is the recursive case, some value, which is the empty list case, and the list that is actually being operated on, and then it returns something which the operation returns, and which is the empty list case value. And it's fairly simple to write its definition. And given the fold, we can define, and these are not correct. I did actually check these. So we have with folds, different versions of it. So length, we, so for some reason I didn't take null here. Anyway, a plus here, but okay, it's not a problem. Length, we ignore the first argument of the operator, which is the operator is the recursive case, and add one to the result of the recursion. And we start with zero, because the empty list has length of zero. LM, similarly, nothing very difficult there. We have the first in the operator. We have the first parameter is the first element in the recursive case. The second parameter is the result of the recursion. Result of the recursion, yeah. And we return whatever we should return at the end of the recursion. And the empty list case is just false, as we talked about. Null. Yeah, it's a binary constant function. Nothing particularly difficult about that. The only difficulty is how do you write a binary constant function without lambdas, but it's not very difficult, that one either. Yeah. Oops. What happens in fold is we have a list, which is basically, it is something like this. We have the constructor of the list. Its left side is the element, and the right side is the rest of the list, as we know. So we can write the list as some sort of a tree, where we have the first element, the rest of the list starts with the second element, the rest of the list starts with the third element, and the rest of the list starts with the fourth element. And what float does, it basically takes this tree and replaces every constructor with the function that is given as the operator and the empty list with the empty list case result. So we just replace every column with the function that is given to the folder, and we replace the empty list with the zero, the empty list case. Okay. Who is confused? Whoa, no one. I was confused when I first studied this thing. Fold R is basically that we have the operators, the rest of the list parameter is on the right. And fold R, fold L is the different version where we have the rest of the list on the left. And it's basically the same thing except that it turns the tree on its into its mirror image. These two are not equivalent in every case, but if the operator in itself is correct properties, then they can be almost equivalent. But we have actually important differences that change on which inform how we choose between folds. So why do we do this? Yeah, I said I like to write recursion because recursion is fairly simple to think about. And I'm weird in that I don't much. Actually, I like recursion more than loops. I used to learn how to write loops by writing it as a recursion first and then turning into loop. But yeah, I'm weird like that. But anyway, folds are a bit more difficult than recursion. But what we do with this that folds allow us to abstract away. We have an abstraction that we can prove certain general things about, and these theorems about the general fold give us things that we can apply in different situations, which would be difficult to do. Not impossible, but difficult to do if we wrote everything as straight recursions. One of the good properties is that we can fairly easily rewrite different versions of folds in the different ways so that we can write a clear version of something and then have the compiler use these laws to actually simplify it in such a way that we actually get much faster results. So we're talking about fold fusion and other similar properties here. So, one lovely idea is the Banner split property, which the name makes no sense. The name comes actually from a historical way of writing this. Some people used to write fold as something like this, and they like to call this the banana operators. And then we had a operator called split, which is basically equivalent to pairs. So I'm not confident enough to write it actually using that notation. But we get the same theorem, which is called the banana split property, in such a way that we have the bananas and we have the split, and we get banana split. Yeah, it's a very lame joke. Yeah, okay. But, the good thing about this kind of jokes is that it makes it fairly easy to remember where the names come from. Of course, it would be better if the names were simple to remember otherwise, but we can't have it all. So, if we have a function which is basically a pair of folds, then we can write it as a single fold where we basically fold over pairs. So we can turn a pair of folds into a fold of pairs. That's banana split. And we can this way turn two loops into one loop. In one sense, this doesn't give us much, because basically, if we have two loops over the same list, so long as it's a finite list, then two loops is not much more difficult, not much slower than one loop, as soon as they both do the same operation to the all the same elements. But what we get here is that if we have infinite lists, we get nice things, and with Lysiness, we get nice things from this. I'm not going to go into details of that. One example here is Lysiness. And it's a good example of why it might happen, is that if we have a list that we average, we sum it, the list, and we compute its length, okay? This is simple enough, but if we have to recurse over the same list twice, then we have to keep the list, the whole list in memory, the whole time. And this might mean that we cannot stream this. So we cannot give the average a stream of values, and it would release the elements that is already seen as soon as they are have been processed. So we have to actually hold that big list in memory. But we can write the same average differently using fold. Sum and generic length are both folds. They are fairly simple folds. So what we do here is we do a banana split and take two folds and make it one fold over a pair. So we sum on one of the on the left side, and we count the lengths on the right side, and then we use the result. Yeah, we will get to that later. But it's very important. The difference here is fairly noticeable. For example, average one, which has to keep the whole list in memory, takes 10 milliseconds. The other one takes, I think, less than 1 millisecond. Did I get it right? Yeah, I think. Always have to think about how did these units go. But yeah, Ville probably could tell you more about this computation. He's done it, I haven't. But yeah, this is the important point. Average two use constant memory because it doesn't have to keep the whole list in memory at some point, but at any point. But average one, it has to recurse over the same list twice, so it has to keep the whole list in the memory at all the times. And that causes why we need the banana split sometimes. Another one is fold fusion, which is, this is a pretty abstract idea. If we have a function which is a fold, which is composed with some function, so long as the function has the properties that it is strict, which means that it's not lazy. And what this means here is that we can compute f and g incrementally. We can compute f incrementally over g, so that we take the first element of g, the first argument to g, and move it away from both g and f, and do something to it. And we get the same result. If we can do this, these are conditions. If we can do this, and we can, then we can write the function which was defined as a fold composed of a function as a simple fold, which doesn't, which does all the work inside the fold and not in the outside. Yeah. Usually, where this matters is when we have f is recursive, f is a fold. In such situation, we have two folds, and we can, using fold fusion, we can turn them into one fold. So, this is called fold map fusion, and it is fairly simple to derive from those equations that we had. But I am not confident enough to show it to you from memory, so I actually looked it up. So, how does this work? Can I somehow keep this open? Yeah. So, what we are trying to do is figure out under what conditions this particular equations. Holds. It doesn't hold always. Question is, when does it hold? We look at fold fusion rules. So what we're trying to do here is this here is fun, which means that this fold here is the f of the fold fusion, which means that for this to work, we have to define map as a fold. And so we have to actually think about how would we define map as a fold. What does map do? It takes... Okay, let's write them like this. I'm going to tell you that this is a bad way of writing folds in a minute, but anyway. Okay. Like this, more like. The rest parameter is the result of map. Map f to the list is given as an argument, and the that is given to it as an argument, except the first argument. So the rest of the list after mapping, and what we want to do is the full map. So we want to add to it the element that is given that map does to the first element. The first element is here. And what map does to it is it applies f to it. So we get fx, and we add it to the rest. In the empty list case, map f returns empty list. There is nothing more to that. And we can simplify this a bit. Though I'm not sure if it simplifies much. Okay. And now, okay, using the Cloud Fusion, this function here is the G of Cloud Fusion. F is the actual fold there. Then we have A. Must be empty list because the A is here. And this means that F being this fold here, B is what F returns when it's given an A. So B is actually A. This becomes difficult because we have different names here. So this here is the so-called B. Okay, we have this. Then we have the requirement that F must be strict, which means that fold R, this fold R FA must be strict for it to work. And then we have this particular equation here. And what does it tell us what must happen? So we take the left side, which is F, which is this here is the it has to be this here is the F. Okay, so folder FA. What can we do about it? It is given argument as an argument G, which is this here, just the simplified version. And to G we get X and Y, which I hope are names that we haven't used here, except in lambdas. Yeah. Oops, not here, not like that. Like this. 1, 2, 3, 2, 3, 2, 1, 0. So X and Y go here. Okay. So what can we do with this? We start computing using the same techniques that we have been using when computing on this course and when proving things. So we can do not actually remember what Wille writes here. Let's call it beta reduction anyway on X. So we have fold here F and X stays. Yeah. Y. And this here is operator section. Fold FA, and we get Y to this parameter, so we get F X Y. And let me check. Use the definition of folder on the assumption. No, we don't have to use the assumption. We have here a non-empty list, so we call map G is actually what we are doing here, so we have this should be G, and now it makes some sense. Yeah, so folder and definition, we take the first element, apply to it the F, so F is given, let me check, do not remember this by heart, so do we have the actual definition here? Of course not. Nothing so simple as that. We had it earlier. Yeah, so in the second case, yeah, F gets, and the second argument is the recursion. I am correct about that. Yeah. Like this. Yeah. And now we can look at the folder fusion. So we were trying to start from this, which was this here. And what do we have here? We have something which is the X here, and we have the Y, yeah? And so this means that this here, if it is F, F here is this one folder, FA, yeah, it's F. And then we have, it is a second parameter to a function f, which gets x as its first parameter. So we can have actually this as f dot g x. Yeah, and this means that this one here is the H, and this one here is the B, which is exactly what should have been. Yeah. So the conditions for fold fusion, that we can always do this so long as the fold itself is strict. Okay. And fold fusion, it's a nice, the fold map fusion is a nice thing which the computer, compiler knows how to do. These kind of derivations are needed only to prove that these rules are right. But once we have proven, or we just look up that someone else has proven, we have something that we can use directly. And actually, GHC is... it's smart enough that you can give it special definitions that tells you that we can do this kind of fusion to these functions always or in some conditions. And then it does. It applies those rules and actually simplifies expressions using these kinds of ideas. And that allows THC to actually make very large changes to the program without changing its actual performance, its actual behavior, and make things much faster. One of the harder things about working with Haskell, in my experience, is dealing with the fact that GHC actually makes non-trivial optimizations, and things don't work exactly like you think they do. Okay, the actual behavior, in the sense that if you get this, give this information to it as parameters, it will result in this output. Okay, this stays the same, and also it doesn't change the fact that whether the function manages to finish or not. Those things are the behavior that is remains the same. But what we have is that the actual performance changes radically, and sometimes not in intuitive ways, and that makes it a bit hard sometimes to work with Haskell. So the actual, what we have done here is hand-waving version of the theory. The actual theory is a bit more theoretical. But how do we actually use this? There are some techniques that we can use that make things easier. And actually, when I read this Ville's techniques, I remind myself, okay, these are the same techniques that we can use to write recursion over lists. So essentially, there is nothing new here. If you know how to write recursion over lists, you know how to like write folds. The difficulty is here that the brain doesn't want to acknowledge this. And that's the difficult part. And another part that's difficult here is how do you deal with, how do you get your brain to actually understand that this is nothing difficult? That is the most difficult part. And, there's an anecdote. One of the problems actually is that fold as a name doesn't really tell us what it does. I mean, there is a reason why it's called fold, but it's not quite apparent. Tony Hoare, I hope I pronounced his name right, who is a very, very famous computer scientist, now very old also, used to say at some point, decades ago, Haskell is doomed to succeed. And also, I'm not sure actually if this is Peyton Jones or Hoare. The motto of Haskell is avoiding success at all costs. And where do these anecdotes come from? They come from the point that we use, in Haskell we use, the Haskell ideas come from very esoteric higher math. And the Haskell guys haven't really thought about how to make it easy to digest. So we get ideas which are basically simple and start calling them difficult names like monads, or simple ideas and start calling them arrows, which actually don't look at all like anything we might shoot from a bow or what we might write on the blackboard. Or we get things like folds. So we use terminology which does not really tell you what's happening unless you know the esoteric mathematics, at which point it's trivial. But to get that point where the name itself tells you what's happening requires a lot of work. What we're trying to do here is give you enough to actually survive with these things without having to learn the higher mass that these things come from. So, fold. You should always start with something like this. The function that you want to write, we have the fold. It could be fold L, fold L, could be fold R, could be fold L prime. We have some operator, we have some value which should be returned for the empty list, and we have some post-processing which is then composed to the fold. And then we define in a where clause what they are. Post, op x, arc, and empty. We start with something like this. So, the example here is a function partition which gets two parameters. It gets a function which returns true or false for each element, and partition takes each element in the second argument list and puts each element for which the first argument, the predicate argument here returns true, it goes to the first argument, and everything where it returns false, we put it in the second argument. Okay, this is not a particularly difficult thing to write as a recursion, but let's see how it works as a fold. First question, how do you choose which fold to use? So we have folds like fold R, fold L prime. Yeah, how do you choose? Main things, if you must work with infinite lists, you must use fold R. The other ones don't work. If you always process the whole list, then it's usually better to use fold L prime. Also, if you are computing a single one value, which is not a list or anything like that, just, for example, an int or something from the whole list, then you use fold L prime. And when do you use fold L? Never. Now the question becomes, why is not fold L? Why do we have fold L? Why is it fold L for some the same as fold L prime? Well, that's historical. There are historical reasons for that, and we don't get to that here. So remember, fold R of fold L prime, never use fold L without a prime. Yeah. So let's see if we can get this work. Which one we should use for partition? Fold L, fold R, or fold L prime? And I think we have enough that if we get something like 25, we can move on. And a couple more. Okay, let's see what we have here. We have, okay, everybody, almost everybody agrees that it's not fold L. Yeah, that's good. You listened to me just now. Fold R, fold L prime, it's evenly split. It's quite right. Fold L is not the right answer, but fold R, fold L prime, and let's do the group part. Okay, we seem to be converging. So there are still a lot of people who are convinced that fold L prime is the correct one. Does anybody want to defend this idea? Why would it be fold L prime? Yeah, so there was a speculation, I think, that since we are going to have to partition the whole list anyway, then why not use fold L prime? Yeah. Anybody else want to comment on that? Okay, why would fold R be the correct one?
Yeah. Well, I had. An example in which case, for example, the port R would be useful. Let's say you have an infinite list of integers and you want to take even numbers. So your function you're using is the even function. And if you use port L prime, it's never going to finish. But with fold R, you could use the take function to take some subset of those answers.
Yeah. So, questions: do we need this function to work with infinite lists? I see no reason why not. And if that is so, then we must use fold R exactly for this reason. Because if we have an infinite list, fold R L prime is going to never finish. And the other one is, do we reduce it to a single value? Single value here means something like an int. It doesn't mean a list. And in this case, we end up with a parallel list. So, okay, that one doesn't hold. Does it require processing the entire list? No. We might, for example, ask, in your example, what are the 100 first even numbers in this list? And then we might use this partition function with take. And in that case, fold L prime. If it's a finite list, then fold L prime will work, but it will be slow, assuming it's much larger list. Okay. So, once we have chosen which one to use, and as you can see, it was chosen to be fold R, decide what it should return on an empty list. In some case, but not in this case, we have to use auxiliary variables, something, some additional data structures during the fold that we do not actually return from the real function, but we don't have that now. So, in the case of an empty list, simple thing, we partition it into a pair of empty lists. Then next question is, what are good names for X and ACC? And this is one thing. Ville told me last week that he has noticed that the one of the best things for a student struggling with fold in his recent experience is, think about these names. I mean, name them with in some way that actually tell you what they are. X and ACC, they are so generic that they don't really tell you much. Or XS, YS, Z, they usually don't tell you much. In some special cases they might, but not usually. So try to think about what names you should use. So, about names. Short names are common, but they are not the best choice in every situation. And folds are, in Ville's experience, very difficult, at least for students learning it when they use short names. So, where do we use one of the names and when do we not use them. Basic idea is we have a very simple function like the second. Okay, we can comprehend it by just looking. We don't need long names. Actually, the long name would just distract from the structure. Partition in three lines, yeah, we can basically follow what's happening. It's not something we can comprehend in one look, but we can understand basically what's happening. And in this case, the X and XS, they have some idea. We have the pattern of X, XS is the standard way of saying the first element of the parameter list and the rest of the parameter list. And in this kind of simple situation, it is usually the best choice. For map, or in general, having a one-line type signature, one-letter names are usually the best choice because long names just makes it longer and harder to grasp. But sometimes you might want a more more descriptive name. For top-level definitions, and this means, I think, the actual top-level functions, not their parameters necessarily, you almost never want to have top-level names that are just one character long. In very special cases, it might work, but not in general. If you have a 20-line definition of a function where X appears somewhere in the middle once, okay, you look at the definition fx, yeah, x is the parameter. But when you are in line 15 of the function, oh, here's x. What's the x? What's this x here? It's difficult to see that it comes from the actual function definition, the start of the definition. So use a bigger name so it's easier to spot where it occurs. And I think we have, yeah. Another question. This is looks like an opinion, but it's really not. There is a technical idea here. So the question is, if we have partition definition that is a fold R with the operation having the parameters X and X's, and we don't know what it actually contains here, can we understand what X and X's are, what their types are, just by looking at this? And yeah, alone, and then we go to 25, I think. So the question is, what is the type of XS obvious, basically? And if it is, what it is? Okay, a couple of more. All right, let's see. So there are a couple of people who are of the opinion that it's obviously is some pair where the pair has the same types. Pair elements have the same type, or that it is a list of such pairs. And then we have a split here between it is not obvious and it is obviously something, a list of whatever. Don't think I am going to comment on any of this at this point. Let's see what you get from the group discussion.
No, this is not
Okay, we seem to be converging to, no, it's not obvious. Why is it not obvious? Well, if I look at it myself, and as I told you, the idea is to look at just this, nothing on the other, what you might know from other contexts. So we're looking at this part. So the three three dots means that it's there's something there we haven't looked at it carefully. We're trying to understand what this fold does. Okay, so what we know from here is that, okay, it must be some kind of a list, so it can't be this one. But which one of these, I can't really tell. I mean, is it just a list of something, or is it a list of pairs? I don't know. And in fact, I'm thinking that this actually buggy because this should not be a list, actually. And yeah, it certainly is not obvious to me what the excess here is. But yeah, there is some arguability here, but I think point that Ville is trying to make with this question is that as long as it is arguable, it is not obvious. If it is possible to argue both ways, then it cannot be obvious by definition. And I think his point is this exactly, that if you can argue in different ways what it is, then you should make it more explicit. And here we have ha. First partition of the list, names. And so we give the names, and then we start thinking about, like we do in the recursion case of a recursion, think about the first element and think about that you already have the result of the rest of the list. What do you do with this? And we can start, okay, we know that this rest of the elements must be a pair because empty is a pair of lists. And we know that we are supposed to return a pair containing the list of those that for it returns true, so matching elements, and those that are not matching elements, so the rest. And we can get more specific names by unpacking the data structures here. And then we have names, and we can start thinking about it. So yeah, we already have the result for the rest of the list, and now we have to figure out how do we combine the result for the rest of the list with something that we do to the first list, the first element, and do something. So we have already partitioned the rest of the list, and how do we add the first element to this partition so it works? And yeah, the operation must return the same type as it gets as its second parameter, otherwise it's broken. And this is basically easy. We, in this case, okay, we have two cases. We have the case where p, which is the predicate function, applied to first is true, in which case we put it in the first list, and in the other case we put it in the second list. And yeah, now we just have to figure out what the post is. Did we use anything? Can we return the result of op directly? Yes, we can. We don't need post. We can delete it. And we have a working partition. That is hopefully. I don't think I've tested it. It's not always that easy. So sometimes we have to use some sort of auxiliary information to carry information, extra information from different elements that is not part of the result of the fold of the actual function. For example, a function called erase first, which is supposed to, it takes parameter as an element, and a list, and it will produce a list where the first occurrence of that value has been erased. So from list 1, 2, 1, 3, we erase the first one and leave the second one there. So we get 1, 2, 3. Then we have list 1, 2, 2, 1, 3, and erase the one there. So we get 2, 3. But now, trying to do this as a basic fold without any additional things is probably impossible. We basically in the operation part, we are supposed to already have the erase the first occurrence of one from the rest of the list, and then we are supposed to somehow combine this result with the something that derived from the first element of the list. And the problem here is, if we were trying to do this here, then we will. Well, sorry, in this case. So we have this here, 2, 1, 3, and we have already erased the first from the last part. So we have. We are given this here and this here. Oh, sorry, yeah. So we are doing this here, and we have getting this result here. We get 2, 3 out. We give. We get to op 2, 3, which is the result of this one, and we somehow must know that this one here is not put to the beginning, but where it was erased in the recursive call. And this is probably impossible. We do not just simply have enough information at this point without some trickery to do this. Now, an imperative programmer might start thinking, okay, might. Define some global variable where we put this information, but okay, we can't do this. We are Haskell. We can't do global variables. So we have to figure out something else. One possibility is think about, okay, perhaps the first op needs to know if it has been removed, so we should probably somehow propagate the information that has been removed. And we might do something like this. We are returning just a list, but we use as an intermediate data structure this kind of pair where we have the actual result and then information whether we have actually erased it or not. And using this, we can. Yeah, I'm going to skip this. We can implement it fairly simply. There is a bug here. This should be first here. So we have this here. It's basically the same as before, except that we use the information whether it has been erased or not. If it has been erased, we simply put it at the first. And if it has not been erased, we go and erase it like previously. And we start with the situation where we have not erased it. And I have copied this already. And I seems like I need to restart the session. Okay. Yeah, I have here this version here written and that bug fixed. So let's try it. Come on. So what was it that we were trying to do here? Let's try this. Erase first. Like this. What? Doesn't work correctly. What's the bug? Why doesn't it work?
It's using the right folder, right, and it's matching, it's deleted and done.
Yeah, so we are using fold R, so we basically we're going it the wrong order basically. But we need the fold R because this needs to work for infinite lists. So yeah, seems like a good idea, doesn't work actually. So we need to think about it again. Oops. Yeah, so in here, the problem is not whether the first op knows that it has been erased. The problem is that the last op that has it, or the subsequent ops must know that it has already been erased. And how do we do this? Well, we cannot do it like that because the return value flows from right to left. We have to use something that flows from left to right without changing fold R into fold L. And the technique here is to use a function as a return value. So we basically what the fold R does is it builds a big function which then is given the information. So in this case, the parameter of this function is should I erase? So the information flowing to the right is should I erase? Now, it's given as an extra parameter, which is part of the function that is being built. And we can here then not use lambda, just use pattern matching here. And then we can actually pattern match, so we can use do erase, don't erase, and we can then define it. So do erase case is like the first, the basic version. Don't erase, okay? We are done. There's nothing to do. And empty is a function that returns empty list and doesn't do anything with the parameter. And does this work? Well, I have it here under the name of erase first prime. And I think this has no bugs. So let's see. The same. Yeah, it works, at least in this particular case. Yeah. There's one thing that must be taken into account when we are doing fold R, fold L, is that we sometimes have to work against the standard laziness of Haskell. So when we're trying to do sum, defining sum, we define it like this in an elementary way. So empty list is zero, non-empty list, we sum the first element and the rest of the list. There should be a recursive call here, I'm pretty sure. And the fold R version is fairly simple. The problem here is that this builds a computation which has to be kept in memory uncomputed until we have computed the whole list. So we have to compute, in this case, 1, 2, 3, we have to build this computation 1 plus 2 plus 3 without being able to actually compute anything before we get to the base case, which gives us 0, and that at this point we start computing from the right to left, and we get kindergarten math, and we get 6 here. And that's a problem. Another version is use an accumulator function. I think Ville covered this idea earlier. So we build the computation as a accumulator parameter, and we can basically, what we do here is we do fold L instead of fold R. And now we get to the reason why fold L should never be used. Because fold L and this trivial version of sum, at least assuming that we don't get compiler optimizations, it does the same thing. We wanted to do this, but what we actually get is it builds this computation, which it in principle could compute. But it just because we're talking about lazy language, it, okay, I don't need that. Let's just store it. Okay, I need to compute 0 plus 1.2. I'm lazy. Let's not do it. I need to compute 1 plus 0, 0 plus 1 plus 2 plus 3. I'm lazy. Not do it. But then some returns this computation which has been not computed, and it does. Oh, well, I have to compute it now. That's what happens. And we get no satisfaction from using this accumulator approach because of Haskell's laziness, assuming that compiler optimizations are not clever enough to figure it out. In this simple case, I think it is, but there are much cases where it is not. The simple solution to this is to use bank patterns, which I don't think Ville has mentioned here on the lectures, but is in the materials. The idea here is that we put a bang, so exclamation mark, to the front of a pattern that we want to be computed. Now, there are lots of caveats here. We are not talking, this is not simple conversion to a strict language here. What it does is it just tells it compute this parameter up to so long that you know the principal or constructor of this value. We don't care about the whatever parameters that constructor gets. So you don't get actual. So for example, if it's a list, if the bank pattern parameter is a list, we don't get the whole list. We just get information whether it's an empty list or non-empty list. That's the only thing we get. And so there are lots of caveats to this. But in this situation where we're talking about numbers, it is most likely sufficient to say that, okay, I'm using this Z here, but I want it computed, damn it. And at this point, we will get the version that we want, which is that it computes the result before it passes it into the function. And we unfortunately do not have time to talk about function composition and its generalizations. They are fun things, but they are properly just appetizers for the next course, which will happen sometime in the fall, I think. And we are done. I think this is the last lecture here. Unfortunately, I have no time to stay here and answer your questions. So if you have any, you may reserve appointment, or you may see me in the computer classroom tomorrow. But with that, thank you. That's been fun. Yeah?
Can you use a Slack still?
Yeah. I'm still in Slack. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.